Elliot Friedman from 32 Thoughts and Hockey Night in Canada. Hello, Friege.
I'm good. How are you doing?
So here's what I'm wondering about tonight.
I can't believe I slept until 11 today. Oh, my God. What a lazy bastard I am.
So a little peek behind the curtain. So I called Elliot around 11 o'clock because I was out walking the dog. And, yeah, you didn't sound too awake when I called you at 11 bells, Elliot. I'm like, am I waking you up? I know we were up late doing the podcast last night, but, geez, Elliot, rolling out of bed at the back of 11.
I do like to keep banker's hours, Jeff, but that's a little bit late for me.
All right, so here's my question before we get into what happened last night. Tonight we'll see round two of the Battle of Alberta. I'm curious, will you be wearing, I made a little list here, cowboy boots, spurs, perhaps come riding in on a horse? Will you have an enormous novelty belt buckle? Will you have a long sleeve button down shirt on, or will you have a buckskin jacket? Will you be wearing any of the above, or perhaps riding in on a horse tonight?
I think that it depends on what Ron decides to bring in from his wardrobe, and does he have four of them? I think that's the question. What Western items of four does Ron McLean own? And that will determine what I wear.
I loved it the other night. I'm very curious to see what you guys have in store tonight. Before we get to the Battle of Alberta tonight and round two of the Rangers and the Carolina Hurricanes, a little opening bit that we're just talking about the Tampa Bay Lightning and, you know, referencing the great line by marvelous Marvin Hagler, which is, you know, it's tough to get out of bed at 5 o'clock in the morning to do road work when you've been sleeping in silk pajamas. You know,
for the last
couple of years, the Tampa Bay Lightning have been sleeping in silk pajamas. They're top of the mountain, two-time Stanley Cup champions, but you'd think they've never won the Stanley Cup before the way that they're playing, Elliot.
Well, first of all, I love that you referenced my favorite boxer of all time, Marvelous Marvin Hagler. I was a huge fan of his. I don't even think you could argue they've been sleeping in silk pajamas the way they played. They got out and they simply, it sounds like they never stopped doing that early morning road work. That game last night, it's interesting. I guess I haven't seen it yet, but someone told me about it. Nate Thompson, the player who played in Philly this year, he had a tweet last night about Stamkos, like just talking about that is such a perfect image or vision of what Stamkos really is as a captain and a leader, that, you know, he kept on getting hit and leaving and coming back. And to me, the real shot that really showed it was Hagel getting carried out and Stamkos waiting and then walking right back in. It was like an assembly line to the trainer's room and back. Crazy.
I found the tweet. So it's at Nate Thompson 44. Stammer should go down as one of the best captains to play in conversation with Yzerman's, Messier's, Sakic's, pure goal scorer, underrated playmaker, physical, good face-off guy, and plays the right way, fun to watch, Nate Thompson.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about Stamkos and you think about everything he's kind of been through, all the different injuries, and he keeps coming back, and it would have been easy for him to walk away, never did it. I think the other thing, too, is just the fact that he recognized what was a good situation for him. As we all know, a few years ago, he could have gone anywhere he wanted for a lot of money, and he said, nah, I'm happy here, and I'm staying here. I think he's got a really good handle on what's meaningful to him and his family. He's obviously, you know, I think it's sometimes we've underestimated his competitive nature. At the same time, obviously, he's competitive as hell. I mean, I just thought that was a heck of a performance last night. And, you know, him, Cernak has been really beaten up in this series as well. And he just keeps, you know, coming back. It's like an old Timex, right? Takes a licking and keeps on ticking. These guys are incredible. They you always wonder, well, you know, speaking of boxers, Rocky. You know, my favorite Rocky movie was Rocky III, because that was right around the time I turned 13. And that was the one that introduced Mr. T and Clubber Lang to the world.
And
what
Thunder
do they talk
Lips.
About it?
And Thunder Lips.
That's right.
Yeah.
Hulk Hogan.
And Thunder Lips
really
Hogan.
What took off his career. You're right. And what does Carl Weathers tell Sylvester Stallone in that movie? Look what all these other guys got that you lost. It's the Eye of the Tiger. And Tampa hasn't lost it. And now Survivor's playing, and I'm 14 years old, and a nerd in my basement again. There I am.
You want to hear the nerdiest thing ever? I can't believe I'm gonna admit this. So I loved Rocky III.
What a great movie.
I still remember coming home from the Uptown Theater in downtown Toronto, and coming home and running home from after the bus dropped me off, and running home and like running around the block and doing push-ups and chin-ups as soon as I got in. And oh man, it was so bad. So Frege, on my cassette play, first year of university at Guelph, I had this one cassette. It was a 90-minute Maxwell tape. And on the one side, I had Eye of the Tiger, like the whole side. And on the other side was the theme from Rocky. And it was the only thing that I listened to in the gym working out for the entire year.
I got to say, I got to tell you, I don't even think that's loser. I think that's actually 80s cool.
Listen, I don't think I'm the only person, but I just remember that now, that old Maxwell tape of Eye of the Tiger and the theme from Rocky. There's only two songs on the tape.
Look, anyone who grew up at the same age we did recognize that as 80s cool. That's not bad. That's actually good. Yeah. We're going off on a wild tangent here, but I remember when I saw Rocky IV, which is the one he fights Ivan Drago, Dolph Lundgren in Russia. It was another great movie, but the ridiculous thing about it is at the end of the movie, all the people in Russia are standing up and cheering for Rocky. I remember all my buddies laughing at that as we watched the movie. Anyway, it was those great times, Jeff. We're way off, but great times.
Yes. Somehow we're supposed to be talking about the Tampa Bay Lightning. We've dovetailed into to Rocky and Eye of the Tiger and Survivor and Clubber Lang and Thunderlips. So let's bring it back. How did you see? Because we had a couple of 12 hours or so to digest this thing, more than 12 hours, and have a look at it. What did you think of the Ross Colton goal, the game winner with 3.8 seconds left? Like, I looked at it as a misread by Mackenzie Weegar. Others have pointed out that, maybe Forsling misreads it on that spin and allows Kucherov to get to position quick. Do you have a thought on what happened? I mean, at the end of it, kudos to the Tampa Bay Lightning. I mean, they just weren't just sort of wasting time to get this thing into the dressing room and then back into overtime. Like, they played, you always hear, play to the buzzer, play to the buzzer. That is Tampa Bay Lightning playing to the buzzer right there.
Okay, so we're really going back now to the 80s again. I know this is really not a good like hip lingo podcast, but one of the biggest sporting plays of all time in the 80s was it was in the NBA. It was the Celtics against the Pistons, and Larry Bird stealing the ball from Isaiah Thomas at the end of regulation in a playoff game the Pistons had won. Like, all they had to do was inbound the ball, and they won. And Chuck Daly, the coach of the Pistons, wanted to call timeout, and Isaiah Thomas didn't see it. So he threw like a soft inbound pass, and Larry Bird stole it and fed it to Dennis Johnson for the winning layup at the buzzer. It was a stunning play. And the Celtics radio guys was a guy by the name of Johnny Most. And he had the most gravelly smoke radio voice ever. Like, you could tell he smoked a pack a day. Hmm. And his call of it is pretty legendary in Boston circles. And I remember there were two things that people talked about that play: Bird having the brains to steal it and Johnson having the smarts to cut to the basket when there was no reason for him to do it. He just did it, and he made the winning layup. And I look at that play last night as the same thing. Kucherov, if you watch as he goes back behind the net, he does a shoulder check. He knows exactly the play he's going to make before he throws it out front. He sees Colton coming, and he's like, that's my target, and he puts it right on his stick with a beautiful pass. So Kucherov is the Larry Bird. He's got the incredible skill, and he knows what play he's going to make before anyone else sees it. And Ross Colton is the Dennis Johnson. He's saying, that's Larry Bird Kucherov going for the puck, and I better be in position where I can score because Kucherov is a wizard. Now, the other thing I will say is, you've talked about Weegar and you've talked about Forsling. There's another variable here, and I think Lombard was the forward. I did have some people say to me they wondered if that was a forwards coverage mistake because Colton comes down from the blue line, right? So I think obviously what it is, it's a complete and total breakdown by the Panthers, and there were several players who probably, if they could, like 99 times out of 100, they probably don't react the way they all did at the same time. But this was that one time, and Tampa took advantage, and that's what great teams do.
Yeah, they really did. It was but the other part of it too is that's an incredible shot by Ross Colton. Like, a lot of things happen here all at the same time. And it's the, like, again, like, and we talked about this on the podcast. I always look at, you know, play the clock. You know, there's under yep. 5 seconds remaining on the clock. That's what you have to play at that moment. And Kucherov's not a threat. Just let him stand there. Don't give him any pass options. But we're getting sidetracked. And what I wanted to lead into with this discussion of that goal is we've talked plenty about the Tampa Bay Lightning and what they've done and what they're able to do. What do you do now if you're the Florida Panthers? You just lost two in your own barn. You've completely surrendered home ice to the defending Stanley Cup champion, two-time Stanley Cup mm-hmm. champions. Now, as dinged up as they may be, what do you do if you're Andrew Brunette?
Well, first of all, they were asked about Marchment this morning, and he said it doesn't he's playing this weekend. So, because they have 2 days off, and they're playing back-to-back on Sunday and Monday. So it doesn't sound like he's playing. You know, the one thing I would say is I really liked the five forward power play at the end of regulation last night. And the thing is, too, is Brunette, it's lost in all of this, but Brunette deserves a lot of credit for having the guts to try it. Like, it's 1-1 in a playoff game. You're late in the third period. You're already down in the series, and he throws five forwards out there. Like, if you look at a lot of the five forward power plays we've seen, the one Toronto scored on against Tampa, the one St. Louis scored on against Colorado last night, they've all been, you know, two-man advantages. Or when you're desperate in a game and you're down. I don't know if we've seen one on a regular 5-on-4 power play with the game tied. I think that's a gutsy, gutsy move, and I like to see those kinds of moves rewarded. You know, unfortunately, that one wasn't. But I would keep that. They had good chances. They generated some good scoring opportunities. The other thing is I'm surprised Hornqvist hasn't gotten a shot on the first power play. The guy's made a career out of causing mayhem and accidentally falling on people and pucks go in because of all the craziness he's got. I would try him. And the other thing I mentioned it last night on the show is, you know, do you try like the do you try to trigger the emotions by putting Joe Thornton in? Do you say, you know what, we're down 2-0, we're going on the road. You know, do we try Joe Thornton just to have everybody look and say, I'm going to try to dig in that much harder for a Joe Thornton victory? I don't know. I mean, these are all things that I would consider trying.
See, I thought about that this morning after you mentioned that last night on the podcast, and I don't get the sense though that this is from a lack of effort from the Florida Panthers, and I don't get the sense that this is from like a need, like, a, like they need inspiration at all. Like, it, maybe they're just getting beaten by a better team.
Like, yeah, you know what, that's like, true, try everything.
I just don't know that. I mean, you always measure off sort of, you know, risk reward, and we know that, you know, Joe Thornton isn't the most fleet of foot anymore. And I know it's been a really challenging year for Joe Thornton. This is a lot of time, you know, as a healthy scratch. We all get it, we understand it, but it's tough. And then parachute him into Game 3 of a series against this Tampa Bay Lightning team that is. You know, that is, it's funny too. I just got a tweet from a gentleman by the name of Brad White who said, you know, you guys are talking about Tampa Bay putting their bodies out there to win is reminiscent of what Wayne Gretzky was talking about walking by the 80s Islanders room during their run. Sacrifice equals championships. I mean, you're asking him to now compete against that. Like, I don't know what the right move is here. I really don't. I would just try everything now.
Yeah. I would try Hornqvist on the first power play. I'm actually surprised they haven't tried that yet. Although I did, like I said, I love the group they had on at the end of regulation last night. I thought it gave them some real juice and some good chances.
Just stick Hornqvist in front just to try to take the eyes away and annoy everybody?
Yeah, and the five forwards that they had. You could do that again. They had good chances.
They did. What did you make of St. Louis last night? I made the point off the top. Craig Berube, maybe the first start of this one, the way that he mixed up the players on those top lines, whatever it was, it worked. And David Perron in St. Louis just works, Elliot. Case in point last night, and the series is all tied at once.
I thought that, I thought they'd give Colorado trouble. I don't know if they're, I don't know if, like, I guess I think they are good enough to win. I thought they would give Colorado trouble. You know, I'm not surprised that they came back much better than in game one. I think they just decided that they weren't going to chase them all over the ice. Like, one of the things that happened last night was O'Reilly beat MacKinnon 9 times out of 13 in the faceoff circle. So MacKinnon was chasing the play all night. You know, another thing that happened, I think Kevin really showed it really well, was that Colorado had a small breakdown on the first goal where MacKinnon forced the puck into an area he thought Landeskog was, and he'd gone for a change. And, you know, it's one of those little small things that you don't really think about, and they end up in your own net kind of weirdly. You know, St. Louis is just a really smart, mature team. They're coached that way. They have a lot of really smart, mature players. I'm not surprised they were a lot better. I still think Colorado's a lot to handle. I mean, this is what we all waited for, right? Like, this was the point last year, game two. Even though they won game two against Vegas, they were really rattled by how one-sided for the Golden Knights that game was. And that's where it started to unravel. So now here we are. So it's 1-1. We're going back to St. Louis. We know how good the Blues are. And I think we're going to get a lot of our answers about the Avalanche. I think they're much better. I think they're much more mentally prepared to handle it. I think they have a better goaltender than they did last year in Kemper. We're going to find out the answer. But I think they are much more prepared to handle it than they were last year. Good series, though. I mean, the Blues,
yes,
they're a hell of a team. They're a really good team.
And they're really well coached. You know, it's funny too. It was, you know, before he got the St. Louis job. I mean, Craig Berube was out of the NHL. Like, Ellie, remember how out Craig Berube was? Like, there was like, it was almost like we're never going to see him in the NHL again.
People made fun of it when they promoted him to head coach.
I know.
We talk about fresh ideas, and it's always good to have fresh ideas, Jeff. But you know, old school is not bad. I've never thought old school is bad. You can be old school and adapt. You can be old school and come up with new ideas. And, you know, I remember Ivan Barbashev told me a story about when he first got called up permanently to the Blues. They came to Toronto, and I was just talking to him. And I asked him about Berube, and he kind of smiled. And he just said that he loved Berube as a coach. He said, like, He kind of said he didn't know what he would, like, he knew that Berube was an old school guy. He didn't know what he was going to, because it was in the AHL at the time. Berube coached him when he got called up for good. And I said, what was he like down there? And he was like, he said, if you try hard, you're not going to have problems with me like 90% of the time. And he said, that was true. He said, like, if I played hard and things went right or wrong, he was generally, you know, really good. And he told me a story about when he got the call to go up to the Blues, like, Berube grabbed him and he said, this is what you got to know, this, and I hope I never see you again. And, but, you know, Barbashev laughed about it. I think, I think the players there understand Berube in the sense that if you give an effort, he will always have time for you. And I think that's a lot of the old school way. And I don't think that's bad. We talked about this morning, Jeff, and that is that, you know, Marty St. Louis was on our podcast a couple of weeks ago, and he talked about how hard it is to win. And if you're, like, you can't be soft with the players you coach. If it's hard to win, you have to get that message across. And obviously there's lines you cannot cross. There are things you cannot do. But you have to have, like Steve Yzerman talked about it in his Detroit coaching search, you have to have demanding people to win. And I think, you know, Craig Berube is, like, the players who really love him say he's demanding but fair. And I think that's the way you have to be. And in a lot of ways, that's a really old school trait. And I've often found that the people I've worked best under are demanding but fair. I think I think you have to be that of yourself, too.
I just remember Berube that, you know, after he got fired as a head coach of the Philadelphia Flyers, before he got that Chicago Wolves AHL job, when you're referencing Ivan Barbashev, you know, he was interviewing with teams like Mannheim in the German league. Like, there was nothing left for him in North America. Like, I just think it's a wonderful story. And, I mean, the way he mixed up the lines yesterday, the way that it worked all together, the way that he the way that he conducted this, like a, you know, the conductor of a symphony, was great. Like that is, that was a command performance yesterday by Craig Berube.
Because you know why, Jeff? We've turned old school into an evil term, and it's not.
Oh, it's now it's a pejorative. Yes, absolutely.
Now old school is an insult, and it's not. It's not.
Yeah.
If you can merge old school with new school, you're going to be great. And I saw a guy like Craig Berube last night who was old school, new school, and that's how you got to be successful.
A couple things quick. Battle of Alberta, the second installment tonight. I have no idea what to expect. I have no clue. I mean, I don't think it's going to be a game like we saw. I don't think it's going to be 15 goals. And Markstrom turning a performance like that. I hope it is too. It wouldn't surprise me if at the end of tonight, it's like, it's 2-1. You know, it wouldn't surprise me at all. What was the most surprising thing to you coming out of game one? Because I don't even want to begin to speculate what game two. The one thing we know is the Kachucks are going to have fun in the crowd. Yeah. After that, I have no idea what's going to happen. But what was the most surprising thing to you?
Markstrom. What was Markstrom? Yep. Like, that game probably should have ended 9-2, 9-3.
Yep.
And it didn't because Markstrom had a rough night. I assume he's going to be a lot better. I think that's going to be the biggest difference. Like, I have learned in my life not to underestimate Mike Smith. I have great admiration for like the pride and the drive that he clearly has to be the best and to consistently be as good as he can be. And I think it's very admirable. I just think that if the two goalies are at their best, it's going to be hard to beat Markstrom. And he wasn't at his best in game number one. It made the thing a lot more interesting. I'm curious tonight, like the Edmonton guys, like we know if McDavid's going to play 27 minutes, the ice is going to tilt a lot of the time he's out there. But is someone else on the Oilers, like those Calgary guys, they were really going the other night. Goodrow was really going and all their lines were kind of going. Somebody, you know, the Oilers don't necessarily have to outscore the Flames when McDavid's on off the ice, although it would be nice. But they can't get tilted like they were in game one. Like, it can't be a situation where McDavid's scoring three goals and everybody else is giving up five. They have to be better than that.
Yeah. It has kind of been that way ever since McDavid arrived, though. You know, when the chips are down, you can almost sense the whole bench just looks at 97 and kind of implicitly says, do something. And normally he does, to his credit, but... Man, that's a heavy lift against a team like the Calgary Flames.
Yeah, with too deep, weapons too good
as they have, to say nothing of not even just the forwards, but the defense. And then to your point, I don't think Markstrom has another night like that at all. Quick thought on Rangers Carolina. Game one was all about Antti Raanta, who was fantastic, kept Carolina in there. Ian Cole with the overtime heroics. Your thoughts on game two between these two squads?
Well, the thing that interested me was most this morning, I guess Gerard Gallant was asked if he's thought about moving some of the kids out of the lineup. Like, he's got that kid line that's playing really well. And he was asked, do you want to move any of them up into some of the other roles or with some of the other players? And he said, I thought about it, but I've decided not to do it. And what that says to me is that the Rangers, if they lose tonight, when we go to Madison Square Garden for game number three, I think that's Gerard's way of saying some of our players are on notice that if they like playing together on the top six, they better be impactful tonight or else changes are coming. That was the thing that really stood out for me this morning.
We shall see. All right, great stuff.
All right, Jeff, before we let you go, or the other way around, before you let me go, you were right about one thing, and that is that I don't believe the Barry Trotz interview in Philly is today. I believe it will be coming in the near future, but I don't believe it's today. And I still think that Philly is going to make a huge pitch for him. And also, I think we're not too far away from getting some clarity on Dallas and what some of their plans are.
I believe that.
I think they're going through exit interviews today, so we'll see what happens.
We'll see what the weekend brings for the Dallas Stars, whether it's what's happening behind the bench, what's happening with players, maybe even what's happening at the general manager level as well. Now, the thing about Trotz is, Tim, we mentioned this almost right out of the gate, I think, Elliot, that it just makes sense for Philadelphia to be interested in Barry Trotz. One, because he's Barry Trotz, but two, when you think of all the divisional knowledge that Trotz has, having coached the Washington Capitals and the New York Islanders, like of all the coaches that are available, one, Trotz is just an outstanding coach, but two, like who knows this division better than Barry Trotz?
Yeah, it's a very good and very fair point. Yes, it does.
It makes sense.
A very good and very fair point, and I agree with you completely, but I think Philly is... I'm just curious if Philly's going to play the Godfather role here and eventually at some point make an offer.
I know you love your Godfather references, Elliot.
Always I do.
When you're on the set tonight and you have to wear Western garb, this is the business we chose, Elliot.
That's right. The
business we chose.
Hyman Roth, that's my favorite line. And Jeff, if you upset me, you'll wake up next to a horse's head.
It's lovely. Enjoy that visual. Thanks, Freach. I'll see you tomorrow on set. You take care, pal.
All right, yeah. See you tomorrow. Take care, man.
There he is, Elliot Friedman from 32 Thoughts and Hockey Night in Canada.